When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
In from the side, Houghton. She was surrounded by blue jumpers.
And the siren, groundbreakers, history makers.
Welcome to the Outer Sanctum for not just another week. It's a special week. We are recording this on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to elders past and present and to any Indigenous people listening today. The M will pass the baton on to the W on Thursday night, so we thought it was important for us to get together. If the Collingwood-Carlton season-ending Sunday edition got you pumped, just wait till you see the Collingwood-Carlton season opener edition on Thursday night. In this milestone week, I cannot do the yakking without my football-loving sanctum siblings and footy freaks. I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, it's Lucy Race here.
Hello, it's Tess Teddy Armstrong over here.
Tedwood. We love you, Tedwood. You do such a good job of editing the pod, but also doing the talking. I always feel so lucky when I get to talk footy with both of you. We are smashing the champagne bottle on the bow of the AFLW Season 7 today. It's going to be a special one. But before we turn the page, let's get some thoughts on the end of the men's home and away season. That was a scorcher on the weekend. Teddy?
It was so fun. And actually, it was indicative of the year that's been. I think a lot of the times we get to the end of the AFLM season and we feel really tired because it doesn't have a lot of meaning. It's usually wrapped up, the top eight's wrapped up. This was one of the most fun, even unpredictable seasons that I can remember. And you had that joy of turning on the game and you actually didn't know what was going to happen. We've talked a lot about the reasons for that fatigue in the past. You know, the season's too long and the top eight's decided. But this kept our attention right up to the very end. And so they proved me really wrong. And now we get the truly excellent situation where as a prequel and a sequel, we get AFLW to the AFLM. And like, you know, this is never going to happen again, where we get a bookended 1 year with AFLW. So really, it's been a real ride and it's not done yet. Lucy, how did you cope over the weekend? Because I feel like you're like me, you're like a stressful footy watcher. Did you handle that well?
I did. And what I really enjoyed about the weekend, one of my observations about the weekend is that the games really fell into one of two categories. We had smashings and then we had heartbreaking close live ladder games. And those close live ladder games were quite something to behold. All of them could have had impact on where teams ended up. None more so than that Carlton Collingwood game. And how do we get past Collingwood? Collingwood have been a revelation this year. To see Jamie Elliott once again kick a match winner, clutch, still clutch. It was a great goal. But I want to talk about the Sydney Swans and ask the question, why not the Swans?
I was going to raise this with you two. I feel like we've done the Swans a disservice, really, everyone this year.
No. I disagree. I think they'll love that we're not talking about them.
Let's talk about them more.
Yeah.
And they're in great form. So everyone's been talking about the Cats, sort of five wins in a row. The Swans have also won their last five. And I know they'll be a bit disappointed that they couldn't get quite a big enough margin to finish in second spot. But they've got the double chance and they're just playing such beautiful football. I cannot go past Chad Warner's goal in the first quarter. It was a running goal. He was just past the centre circle when he kicked it. It was just incredible.
But is that at the SCG? Because that's like a netball court, right? Isn't that closer? Isn't the SCG like the size of like a 27 piece?
He's got a bit of the special water from Space Jam about him, though. I feel like he could do that at any ground, really. Put him out in the car park and say, kick it over the church, and I reckon Chad Warner could do it for us.
Mm. Yeah, but no, I like it a lot, Lucy. I feel like there was a bit of chatter about the Swans in the middle of the season, but then I think things like Collingwood 11 games in a row starts to swamp the conversation and Geelong not getting home finals will swamp the conversation because they're those treadmill topics that we like to talk about in the very Vic-centric footy
the
media.
The cats are just purring though, aren't they?
Did you just want to say that?
I did.
Can I also talk about the fact that, you know, you talked about Vic-centric media and each year, you know, we're searching for this fairy tale. Well, there's an AFL team, that's never won a premiership and they're Fremantle Dockers. And I feel like, are we not talking about them as being the fairy tale of September? Because if they can break their premiership drought, and I'm going to put it out there, they're going to go WM.
WM?
In the couple of space of a couple of months. Imagine that. That club could turn their whole fortune around in the next couple of months, and I'm excited to see it. I think that team is, when they're on, they look amazing. And they're that young team. They've got a young, awesome coach. And I just feel like the Dockers have, you know, they should be the fairy tale. They should be what we're talking about.
Well, one of the reasons why we haven't probably been talking about them is because all of the eyes have been so firmly planted on coach conversations, which I do feel like got pushed a bit later in the season. Usually that coach conversation starts happening mid, you know, back half of the season. But I feel like it really hung on until the very end of the season. Sonia Hood claiming Alistair Clarkson last week and then burning Kane Corns was just, oh, it was something that I think football's been wanting to see for a very long time. But Craig McRae being a revelation for Collingwood this year has also presented a burn that I saw on the weekend that was just so, oh, it's just so awkward watching it. And all I could think is, what are men? What are men? Like, I had just watched like the shaking hands of Harrison Petty with Dane Zorko, how they actually shook hands, but they were having a conversation. Their body language was saying, I hate you, get away from me, but yeah, they're still shaking hands. And people go like, oh, well, they shook hands, so everything's fine. And then I watched Gary Lyon say right to Bucks, right in his actual face, Craig McRae has been the revelation this year. And I was thinking, this must be so hurtful for Nathan Buckley. I just feel like women would not cope with having that level of like passive aggression just leveled at
well,
them on
just
TV.
Kind of like, you know, your ex-partner's new partner is so hot.
Beautiful and so smart.
And so smart.
She's a Mal
really
Clooney.
Funny. Really funny.
Your ex has never looked a better version of themselves since that person's been in their life. Like
since you broke up with them, they have just gone from strength to strength.
I'm just flying. Go, how is the best thing that's ever happened to them?
Is that actually how men really talk? Is that really what would happen? Because I just found it fascinating. So, you know, we did bury the lead on like just rolling on with that conversation, but now the North Melbourne do have a coach now, which is fantastic news. I'm actually quite thrilled that Clarko's gone there. My only biggest happiness would have been if he went to Tassie and there was a Tassie team. I would have loved that story, but it's a win-win situation for him. He's walking into a club that's got nothing left to lose, right?
I think he'll love it. I think he'll have a wonderful time there. I heard him this morning speaking to Jared Watley. What's his name?
Watley? Say tribunal.
I can't say it. But he sounded really happy. He sounded like, you know, he'd made the right choice and he was really thrilled at what's ahead of him in terms of rebuilding. And Jared asked him the question, is 17 years too long to have stayed with a club? And I thought his answer was really interesting about how when you ask young players to buy into a system that you also buy into that. And so you don't kind of want to walk away in the middle of it. But I always feel with these coach changes that it's like this massive game of musical chairs where everything kind of moves, but someone's going to miss out. Sometimes it's the coach that misses out. Sometimes it's a club that misses out. And Essendon is in a bit of a world of pain and it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the future.
I was thinking about how there's that quote when you break up with someone, people say like, oh, all breakups end badly or else they wouldn't end. I think it's a quote from a movie. I can't remember, but it's something like that. Anyway, someone will know. Someone listening will know. It could be Cocktail, the seminal film. But I was thinking about coaches and how it never ends well, apart from if Roosie is involved, because I feel like Paul Roos handed over the reins to Horse at Sydney and then same with Goodwin at Melbourne. And unless you've got Paul Roos, you know, holding the musical chair for you. Everyone ends badly. It never ends well. They never stick the landing. But at the same time, exponentially, we've been getting better at saying goodbye to players. That's going quite well. You get a home ground farewell. You get to take your kids out. Then you might get another one interstate and people cheering off Big Boy and no one dropped him. And, you know, I just feel like we're getting worse it's getting worse with coaches but better with players.
And the conversation is getting so much, there's such a jarring between the footy media conversation and what's actually happening internally at clubs. And two examples, you know, we had Clarko saying something so beautifully genuine, this club was there for me when I needed them, and if this is their time of need, I'm happy to be there for them, which I just thought was just one of the nicest things to hear. We had Michael Voss, you know, despite the fact that it could have been truly end of days for Carlton, say, well, we've had a month to get there and we didn't get there. And so that shows where we're at. These honest, undebatable, non-dramatic sentences. Whereas at the same time, we've got the media blowing up at every single option saying, well, obviously this job's got to go to Ross Lyon because he's a guy we know. Okay. If you guys do this 24/7, did we know from the media that Adam Kingsley was even an option for GWS? Not really. GWS went around about that coaching changeover, I think, in a really mature way. Leon Cameron parted ways early. It wasn't left to the last minute. They weren't part of some mad scurry for two people that we've heard of before, because we keep saying people like Craig McRae are a revelation, but he's been in football for a really long time. Adam Kingsley's been around for a very long time. Are they a revelation, or have we just not been paying attention?
Isn't that how the pathway is actually intended to work?
Yeah. Like
pathways. What about with Craig McRae saying about Vossi, I just really care for him and I told him I love him. I was like,
gorgeous.
I don't know if he said I told him that I love him, or if he said I told him I love him. I don't know. It was just a quote that
one
I read.
The other.
But it's I was happy with either outcome. Can we quickly talk about Dane Zorko? Not that I actually definitively know what was said on the field to Harrison Petty, but I'll just say this. It annoys me beyond annoyance that in the wash-up of whatever was said, which was obviously bad because you can tell from the reaction from people who seemingly do know, that all of the rumour and innuendo has dragged through the mud the names of two women related to Harrison Petty, that somehow that is still weaponized. I'm like, it absolutely shits me about this game that two women could have just been watching a footy game, or not even. They could have been out having, you know, beers with friends or looking after their kids or whatever they were doing. Then all of a sudden there's rumour and innuendo in the biggest gossip machine in town where their names are being dragged through the mud, talking about really potentially traumatic things. It infuriates me that the weaponization of family members or partners is still happening in this game. It is total bullshit that people think that this is okay and that this is still on the table. If you want to keep it on the field, then keep your comments on the field. Like, keep it about the actual people who choose to play this game. Keep it about things that are related to football. I'm beyond furious that this has happened to these people and that this conversation's happening. And I'm sure that they'll shake hands and they'll get over it, and the clubs will say, oh, nothing to see here, and the AFL has already investigated and said, move on. But do you know what that leaves? That leaves two people potentially with a legacy of having been embroiled in something that is completely of no fault of their own, bringing up really personal stuff. And I just think it's so unacceptable. It makes me furious. It's another thing that pushes women out of this game.
The other thing it does is that it has these wider implications that go beyond the actual individuals involved and beyond the football field, in terms of, you know, these conversations then are happening amongst other families and friendship groups, and it sets tone, it influences ideas of gender, it influences ideas of what's acceptable. People are talking about things that are rumors, but they're things that also could potentially, you know, be something that other people are dealing with. So those ripples that go out from this game, and because everything does get talked about, it's just everything gets put under the microscope, it really does emphasize the effect of it. And that's the thing that worries me, that we then, you know, we see the response from clubs and the fact that, you know, Zorko is a captain of a football club. And then it raises questions about, well, what's leadership? What qualities do we want in a leader? What is culture? What's a competitive culture? What's crossing the line? And I think the thing that frustrates me is that the football clubs and the league has so much power here. And I know that it's really tricky when, you know, things are alleged and we don't necessarily know what's said. But when we look at, say, comments made by Taylor Walker, that's clear cut that there is some sanctions that absolutely should have come into play and did come into play. And you could argue that it could have been more. With all of these other issues, especially when it become, you know, it's something that comes under the respect and responsibility aspect of policy, we haven't seen a lot of real meaningful either sanctions or what's the word I'm looking for?
Accountability.
Consequences, yeah. Accountability.
You know, I think a couple of years ago we had a situation with Mark Murphy where things were said about his partner on the field, and those comments were made very public, very, very early, and it was like, you know, you can't say this. But the issue with that is, of course, then everybody gets to have a say, yeah. And everybody gets to hear the comments, and so then we all get to talk about it, and so that is just like manifestly worst for that person. And the issue here is, I think, in terms of trying to protect the privacy of the people involved, it's a hard one to see public accountability because they are trying to not make us talk about what was said, because I noticed that was the first thing on Friday night. Everyone goes, well, what was said? Let's find out what was said. Mm. And that not only leads to made up stuff, but also makes it worse, right, for those people who are personally involved. So I think it can be hard for the public to feel like we trust that something is going to happen. I think about Brisbane, for example. I don't think anyone can look at Brisbane and look at what we think the leadership is like under a person like Chris Fagan and what Dane Zorko does on the field, both with his like pesty behaviour and also now what he says. I just think they are like worlds apart. And I think, well, hang on, I'm getting mixed messages from that club and I'm getting mixed messages in your form as well. There might be something to that, right, that there's not a cohesive environment and they'll need to sort that out. But in terms of them as a practicality, they've just finished their home and away season. They're about to play a massive final at home. Do they have space and capacity to deal with this right now? Is that not a conversation that they're going to have after the finals and after this berth about what leadership they're looking for? And we may see consequences from this in a couple of months' time, but they can't actually
enact it now. But also, if the AFL have investigated and said nothing to see here.
Well, I'm not shocked by that, are you? I would be staggered. And I know this is just the cynic, but if I saw an email that said, oh, the AFL integrity units looked at this and they're stepping in and making Dane Zorko stand down as captain, I mean, I would never.
No, that would never happen.
And I don't know what I would want, but I just don't have the faith that there would be all of these extra layers of accountability just 2 weeks before a final, because I know that this is a system that thinks about the footy first and everything else second, and that's why we keep finding ourselves in these situations.
I just feel like the messaging needs to be so simple to players to say, we know that you'll cross the line with the things that you say because you all always do.
Yep.
Don't make it about anyone who's not here.
Totally.
You stupid dum-dums. You stupid dum-dums. No one else, like these people just sitting at home and then all of a sudden get a whack across the back of their head, and whether it's true or not, like just you have to be careful. No one else has signed up to this.
No.
It makes me absolutely furious. It reminded me of the Tom Morris, Megan Barnard from earlier in this year. We've learnt nothing from that. That's what I felt like.
Meanwhile, sledging is still alive and well in grassroots footy, in junior footy. That breaks my heart. I can't see that there's ever going to be any change until we see meaningful change and accountability from elite sport.
Totally. Yeah, on that. Hey, kudos to Peggy. Peggy O'Neill. She's been a bright, shining light for us, hasn't she? Massive achievements at the Tigers. And now we all get to cheer for her because she's going to head up the Comm Games. So she gets to be Team Australia. I love this for Peggy. Born American, watch me go. I'm going to take on the very parochial game in the corner of a universe that no one else is watching apart from that one man in America. And then I'm going to take on the Comm Games, which the Americans have absolutely no relationship with whatsoever. I just love her commitment to sport in this country, and I cannot wait to be Team Peggy wholeheartedly, because she's not going to be banging on about the Tigers all the time. But isn't this huge? Tess, what does Peggy mean to you?
It's actually hard to sum up how grateful I am for Peggy. And whilst I am devastated, actually, I actually feel grieving, you know, the end of her time at Richmond, because it has been so amazing. I'm fine to share it with you. She's just been such a strong character in our club and her time leading the club. Like, there's obviously the on-field stuff, 3 premierships, if you didn't know, and an AFLW side coming into the world under her tenure. But there's the other stuff. There's that stuff we've just been talking about, the culture, the pride I feel in my club, not just because we go about things in a certain way on the field, but our off-field relationships. We saw it on the weekend. The Tigers went over to Michael Hurley on the field, you know, congratulate him after the goal. And I know that Peggy didn't necessarily text Cochin and say, you know, gather the troops and go over and say hello, but this has all happened under her time. She's been so professional. She's such a game changer for the league. We're seeing so many women in positions of leadership right across the clubs because they're saying, oh, well, that worked for them. We'll give that a go. And how good's that? But she's also like a delightful and funny person. And I don't know who else would have been lucky enough to both enjoy their president from afar, but also get to know them and to hold the premiership cup with her. And we got to toast our premierships. So we've done some lots of radio together, chewing the fat.
Then there was that time she invited us to her house for dinner.
She invited us to her house for dinner. And then that was only trumped by the fact that when I had a baby and I was in that newborn, you know, all out of sorts time, I get a little package in the mail from Peggy O'Neill, and it's a little knitted Richmond jumper. And I'm not sure.
I think she does that for every member that ever has a baby, Tess, sorry to say.
It made me feel special, and that's her power. Now she's an icon of the club, and now I know what I want to be when I grow up, and it's Richmond president. I'm just like, right, I want to do what you did, and I'm going to have a few peanut M&Ms in her honour over the next few weeks and just see if we might get another sneaky premiership for Peggy. But thank you, Peggy, for everything. It's been a real ride, tough shoes to follow.
I do love that. I really hope now with Peggy heading up the Commonwealth Games, is it time that we get Dolly Parton to be the opening entertainment? Because I'm here for that.
She'll be working on it. She will be working on it. Absolutely go, Peggy.
Bring Dolly to our shores.
Okay, we are just merely hours away now. Gemma Bastiani AFLW clock has been the countdown of my life. And we are just hours away from AFLW season 7. I can't lie, this moment actually feels too big. It feels way too big. It feels like we waited all of the, you know, all of the time. And then we've had to wait till season 7 for some of the clubs to come in. I think it matters to everyone that we all are represented in this game. But I'm going to put it to my big sister Lucy, because I do too much talking. How do you feel? Your team, Hawthorn, is about to come in. You've been waiting 120 years for this. Can you put it into words?
I don't know if I can. It feels surreal, to be honest. But I'm looking ahead to round one, and particularly looking ahead to Saturday when all 4 of the new clubs play. I think for each of the clubs that are joining the competition, they all have a whole lot of history that kind of sits behind them, and that's what they're bringing. So being, you know, very parochial, I'm thinking about my 5 decades of supporting the Hawks, and I'm thinking about little Lucy sitting in the outer at Princess Park when Hawthorn shared a home ground with Carlton back in the 70s. And I'm thinking about all of those experiences that I've had, and I'm wondering how I would have been different if I'd been able to see women play in that jumper. It's a hard one because I feel like it's been, you know, such a long time where that just wasn't even on the cards. And so it's quite new for me to really think that it's a possibility. But I'm just really hoping that everybody gets behind their club. For people who love this game, that they will embrace their AFLW team as much as they've embraced their AFLM team, and maybe vice versa, Julia Kiera. but I feel like we're complete. I feel like everybody's here now, like the family's here. We can all now start walking together in a really beautiful way. And I look forward to what those stories are going to be. And I look forward to the impact, the good impacts that I think that we will see of having women's clubs, women's teams at the highest level in all of the clubs now.
Well, on the eve of AFLW season 7, it just feels like a few moments ago we had season 6. You might need a refresher. So Tess caught up with the best in the biz, the big gun, Kelly Underwood.
Yeah, well, I think I speak for all of us when I say thank the footy gods AFLW is back. So I've managed to secure some time with a woman who is going, we're going to be hearing a lot of her. It's the legend herself, commentator supreme, Callie Underwood. Hello, Cal.
Hi, Tess. Thanks for having me.
Are you pumped? Like, how does your week look? There's a new season. Are you in the head in the footy record? Like, what are you up to this week?
No, I'm pumped. I think it's a great time of year. I actually had to sneak away midweek up to Queensland last week to get a bit of sun and just have a refresher because it's going to be a huge couple of months. And I've been out and about speaking to AFLW clubs and the general feeling is we are going to fall over the line in November because many in the industry, whether they be, you know, at Clubland, AFL land or in the broadcast, have been working on football since the first weekend in January and working every weekend through the women's, then the men's and then the women's. So that first weekend of December, Tess, I'm looking forward to putting my feet up. Lighting a cigar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Taking a couple of months off.
And posting to a successful time. And actually, when you think about it, since AFLW began, because it's been a summer sport, there has been no non-footy period. And so it's going to be bizarre. And I think, like everyone, I'm going to do that thing where I talk about how good it's going to be and then 2 weeks later be like, well, when does footy start?
Yeah.
Like, do we not get footy till March? Like, what's happening? Anyway, but that's future us's problem. Now, what are you, I suppose, most excited about with season 7?
Oh, I think the fact that, you know, all 18 clubs have a women's team. It's definitely now a complete competition. And I think we need to sit back at the start this weekend and reflect how far we've come in 6 seasons. The fact that 4 clubs have had to wait 6 years to get involved, it feels like we've truly arrived. And I think that should be a celebration because there's always been criticism about now we're here, we need to get to the next step. We need to get to the next step. We need to get to the next step. But the fact, you know, 2 of the seasons have been ruined by COVID. We couldn't have a premier 1 year. It's no longer AFL for men. It's now Australian rules football for men and women, all 18 clubs within 6 years. I think that should be a huge celebration point. And the talent is there. I'm looking forward to 540 players. The talent is there. My one query and question is that it's probably not evenly distributed just yet. So we're going to have the powerhouse clubs over the first 4 or 5 seasons, like Adelaide, like Brisbane, like Melbourne, like Collingwood, dominate. The 4 new teams in the Sydney Swans, Port Adelaide, Hawthorn and Essendon probably will struggle a little bit at the start. But in saying that, they're going to bring so much energy, so much enthusiasm and excitement. And I think that's going to add to the competition as well. So there is just so much to look forward to. And I, just on the timing is perfect. Over the next 5 weeks, there are 9 men's games. That's it. And they're all at night. We can't get, people are just craving footy. We can't get enough of football at this time of year. Think of the September holidays as a kid. It was just footy, footy, footy. So how do we fill out, there's only so much you can preview 9 men's finals and they're going to be brilliant. But how do you fill your Sunday afternoons when you wake up on a Sunday after a, you know, an AFL hangover, finals hangover, and you just want more football? How do you fill your Saturday afternoons? So the fact to have these women play on a Thursday night or a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday, and if you're a Essendon or Hawthorn and you've had a men's season that hasn't lived up to expectations and you haven't made it to the finals, you can still go and enjoy and watch your team run around, family time. The AFLW is just joyous. It brings so much joy. Everyone wants to be there, you and all your gang, and I'm excited about being part of it, and we're thrilled to be involved, and I just can't wait. I think the timing's great. And you look at October, AFL still dominates the headlines because of trade. November, it dominates because of draft. And then the AFLW fits in perfectly after that. And then we tie up all the loose ends, you know, wash our hands of it at the end of November. And like I said, we all go away and have a nice Christmas and New Year.
Absolutely. And you talked about those 4 new teams. And yes, it's going to be tough, but there is an advantage potentially to having been able to watch the other teams go about it because we've got 4 coaches that are all very experienced in AFLW. They know women's footy. They understand the systems. They understand the players. They know why it's different. They know why it's special. They've been sitting back having a chance to see how the other teams have gone about it. I think the question for those fans, is it, are they going to be able to be competitive? I mean, there's some talent in those lists.
Yeah, there is, and it's hard to predict, isn't it? I really like Port Adelaide. I like what they've been able to do. They've got Rachel Sporn, who three or four time Olympian in basketball, absolute one of my idols growing up in Adelaide, who's running the women's program at Alberton, and they've been able to make a couple of really key appointments. Or obviously Erin Phillips was the obvious one. Her dad won 8 premierships with Port Adelaide back in the SANFL days when I was a kid. I remember him running around, and so she's the captain, and then they've put in Lauren Arnell as a coach. And I've spoken to Lauren a few times. She's got that coach speak already, Tess. We're going to play an exciting brand of football. But she's promising it, and they've got some other, you know, they picked up Hannah Dunn, who was the Gold Coast Suns captain, so they've got experience there. Gemma Houghton from Fremantle. So they've been able to put a really good list together. They play the West Coast Eagles. The Eagles have, like them, I mean, the Eagles are a rabble at the moment in their men's team, in their waffle team. I think they finished on the bottom, and their women's team, they finished bottom last year. So there's every chance they could pick up a win in that first round playing the Eagles over in Perth, and then they come home for their first home game at Alberton. And I'm going to be there to call that one on the television, so I can't wait for that, where they host the Western Bulldogs. So that's going to be a massive occasion. You think the emotion of something like that could get them over the line. So there's every chance they could win their first couple. So Essendon, obviously, under Natalie Wood, and they've got Peter Searle there as well, who's an experienced women's coach. They landed the big fish in Maddie Prasparkas, who we can't forget, in the very first year as a teenager, won the league best and fairest when she was playing at Carlton. Poor old Daniel Harford, he couldn't hold on to her because she was a mad bomber growing up. So that was obvious for her to go there. And at Hawthorn, the very eccentric coach in Beck Goddard, who we all love, and who's good for a quote, a premiership-winning coach at the Adelaide Crows, gets her second chance with the Hawks. She's been able to secure some big names. So big-name players from other clubs, probably that a little bit older. She's gone for I know the Swans are young and a little bit smaller yet to develop. They bring a lot of enthusiasm. But at Hawthorn, the likes of Caitlin Ashmore, Tilly Lucas-Rudd, who had a great season with the Saints last year, Kate McCarthy, Sarah Perkins. So you just never know. They're a quirky team, the Hawks, and Beck's always got a few tricks up her sleeve. So, I mean, how good's that going to be? The season opener, Essendon and Hawthorn running out for the very first time. Fantastic. Oh,
at Dockland Stadium is going to be massive. And by the way, if people are listening, you can still get tickets and head along, because we want that to be a spectacle. You know, if we're saying put us on these big stages, then we're going to fill it and it's going to go off chops. Now, you talked about the best teams. You talked about these new teams. But there's a few teams like my Tigers who are hanging around in the middle. They've been around for a little bit. They've been developing. Is there going to be a team that's going to surprise us this year?
I've been out and studying a few of them because I've obviously got to broadcast their games early. I hear Tigers are looking okay. They should develop. They were better last year. Yeah. They'll be better again this season. We can't say this year. We have to call it season 7. We've decided at Fox Footy because you can't say season 2022 because that's just far too confusing. So I think they'll give you a bit of entertainment, Tess, over the next 3 months. But the Western Bulldogs have been able to hold on to most of their players. They lost Bonnie Toogood, who went to Essendon and became their captain, and, of course, Isabel Huntington, Izzy Huntington, who suffered a third ACL tear. So she's not going to play for the Giants in the next year or so, you would think. But under B1 and B2, I call them, Burke and Blackburn, they've got great leadership. They were seventh last year. They had some narrow losses. I like them, and they've got a young group. Nathan Burke, instead of going the recruiting, he's gone for a young group, tight-knit group, keeps them together and just wants to improve every year. So I really, really like what they're doing. And then, of course, there's the likes of the Adelaide Crows and Melbourne and North, who have kept their nucleus. I mean, the Demons have just said, they've hidden away and said, go away. No one's coming here. Or well, they've got a couple of good ones. Jordan Ivey comes from Geelong. But they've said, hands off, you're not taking anywhere. They've clearly made a pact to say, we're going to do this for Daisy. We've done so well so far. Prelim, 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 finally made it to a grand final, lost to the Crows at Adelaide Oval last year. They're 4 All-Australians they've still been able to hold on to. And then you think of the Adelaide Crows and you think, gee, they've lost Erin Phillips, that's a massive blow. Well, first, second and third in their best and fairest last year, Hatchard, Marinoff and Sarah Allen, All-Australian are still there. Throw in Woodland, who was the leading goal kicker and an All-Australian. She's still there. They're going to be so hard to beat. The one game that I'm looking forward to, Tess, round 6, the only game to be played at Adelaide Oval, It's the showdown between Port Adelaide and the Adelaide Crows on a Friday night. I'm heading over there to call that one. So for the ABC, that is going to be truly a moment in time. It really will.
Oh, I cannot wait for that. Absolutely. Like, showdowns, give us that. This was the best thing about having all the teams in here. Not only do we get our new rivalries, you know, our AFLW rivalries that kind of develop over the last couple of years, but we get to really have a crack at those old rivalries as well. Now, Cal, before I let you go, who are we watching this season? Who have you got your eye on in terms of individual players?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Tess. So it'll be obviously Maddie Prasparkas didn't have the great season last year with the Blues. She was good, but they struggled. So I'd love to see her in a red and black jumper and what it means to her, whether she can regather her brilliant form from that first season. Her younger sister, Georgie, is at Geelong. And I think everyone just presumed that she'd move to Essendon and the sisters all play together. But I hear Georgie loves living at Geelong. She works at a water park down there. She's a surfer, works in a surf shop. So the Cats have done well to keep hold of her. Her in her second year, she's just got uber superstar written all over her. And then there's the well-established players that are ready to take that next level. So even watching the practice game between the Giants and the Western Bulldogs at Witten Oval a couple of weeks ago, I mean, Ellie Blackburn's just ready to roll. She's got that look about her to take that next step and become a top five player in the competition. And I was on the Gold Coast last week and I snuck out and watched the Suns training and they said, there's Charlie Rowbottom. And I said, no, it's not. I had to get the binoculars and take a second look. Charlie Rowbottom has been in the gym every day, piling on muscle, on muscle, on muscle. She is going to be, in the nicest of ways, a pretty beast in that midfield. Her and Ellie Hampson look, you know, with Bella obviously there as the ruck. Charlie Rowbottom, keep an eye on her. She is going to be formidable this season. She's just got power and explosiveness. I hate the comparison with the men's, but, you know, someone like a Petrarca or, you know, all the talk is the, you know, the Dusty Martin and those Crips and those powerful big mids. That's what Charlie Rowbottom is going to do this year. So I can't wait to see what she does. A former top draft pick, of course, the younger sister of James Rowbottom at the Sydney Swans and a Sydney girl who might head back to Sydney eventually. But there's one to keep your eye on.
Okay. Go away from me. Don't speak to anyone. Keep your voice, right? You've got a lot of calling to do. We're going to hear you nonstop all weekend. So don't waste another single other breath on me. But I've been so grateful to talk to you, Cal. I cannot wait. I feel like weight is off my shoulders because the women are back playing football. Thank God. Here we go.
Get out there. It's a great feel. Community footy, isn't it? Particularly at those smaller community grounds. It takes you back to footy in the sort of 80s and the 90s and support your team and support the women. It's going to be fantastic. I feel like we've truly arrived as a code now that every professional club has a semi-professional bordering on professional women's team. You just think, gee, I wonder what this competition is going to look like in 10 years' time. It's truly exciting.
We're going to sit back and enjoy it all. I can't wait. Thanks, Cal. Happy calling.
Thanks, Tess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sabrina Frederick, and you're listening to The Outer Sanctum.
Ah, you and Kelly, what a dynamic duo. Lucy, you and I were so lucky to go to the Hawthorn jumper presentation. Some tears were shed. They weren't all mine, but we're really deep diving the Hawks for those people playing along at home today. You had a chance to catch up with someone pretty special.
I did. So Akech Mercure-Chuot is no stranger to firsts. You'll remember she was drafted into Fremantle's inaugural team in 2016. She played in the Tigers' first season and she's going to run out in the Hawks jumper as they take the field for the first time this weekend. She's a proud South Sudanese woman who brings so much to our game and I caught up with her earlier this week.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
It's such an exciting week, isn't it, with Season 7 kicking off this week. You're going to be taking the field in new colours. How are you feeling?
Honestly, I'm really excited. I'm so excited. Nervous at the same time as well, but Just really excited more so because we have so many, you know, it's the first time the Hawthorn Football Club's going to have their first inaugural AFLW team, and all of us are going to be debuting for the club, which is pretty significant. So there's a lot of things on. I'm actually just doing some uni assignments at the moment. So that's been pretty good, getting my head out of football and kind of thinking about something else. But yeah, I'm just excited for the club. I know they've done a massive, massive job in getting here. And I can just see how proud everyone is. So I'm super excited.
And why did you decide to join Hawthorn?
I think for me, it was just like a fresh start. I was kind of done really after the end of the season. I actually told my former club, the Richmond Football Club, that I wasn't going to be taking part in season 7. I just wanted a break. I wanted to go back home, visit my family. It's hard. I live here by myself. My whole family's in Perth and some are in South Sudan. So it's been a challenging 4 years, and then COVID happened. I just kind of just stopped enjoying footy, really. It just became almost a chore. It was like this struggle to get to. And obviously it being a part-time role as well, it's really hard on careers, and, you know, there's other things that I want to do. And a lot of the time those things might not be in the country here. It might be that I want to go back home and work or whatever it is. It just makes it really impossible to challenge, to kind of balance all those things. So those were the things that were kind of in my head when I was making the decisions at the end of the last season. And then I got a call from the great Beck Goddard, of course. And I had a 2-minute conversation with her. And she just enrolled me in the possibility of me enjoying my footy again, and really just reminded me of who I was and how important it was for me to continue to play football. And I think that's what really got me over the line, that somebody can believe in you that much. Like, I haven't even met this woman before that phone call. Like, I've heard of her and I've seen the amazing work that she's done in her career. And so for me to get a phone call from her, for her to just enroll me in the possibilities of playing at the Hawthorn Football Club was quite exciting. And it was the first time in a very long time I actually was excited about something. And I remember speaking to my manager. And yeah, we just made the decision. We're gonna play football. And here we are. It's been a wild journey. It's been so good.
You talk about all of the other things going on in your life. Did you have to sacrifice anything big to play again? Is there a story there?
Yeah, there's many stories. Well, I was kind of in this space of one of my cousins' Sunday has been bugging me about going to The Bachelor for so many years. And she sent me this application process on Snapchat one day, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I go in to fill it out and everything. Like, I just wanted to like suss it out. And they were like, yeah, filming starts in May and da da da. And I was like, oh, May, we don't have football then. This is great. Like, I don't have anything then. Then obviously they announced that the season's going to be fast forward. So it was too late. I had already applied for it. And at that time I was already really retiring, semi-retiring really. I went through this big applications of going to meet my potential future husband on The Bachelor, which is quite, it was hilarious. It was quite a full-on program, like process, all the things that I had to do just to go on this TV. But yeah, so I eventually got in and then Beck called. And I'm really glad I chose my new sisters. Like, I got 30 plus new sisters, coaches, our amazing staff, and our men's club who are just incredible, our brothers. So I'm really glad I kind of chose the Hawthorn Football Club, really, because it's been the best 10 weeks of football that I've had in a very long time, just training, being around the club and all the people that I've met in this journey so far. So yeah, I'm super glad. But as I told them a couple of weeks ago, they owe me a man. So they better come through soon.
Well, we're really pleased. I'm sure a lot of the AFLW fans will be really pleased that Beck Goddard handed you a rose and you decided to accept it. You're going to be wearing number 34 for the Hawks. Did you choose that number?
Yeah. I've been wearing the 34 since I was down at the Swan District Football Club. It's a very significant number for me and my family. So Dad was married to 7 wives. and in the Sassanese culture, that's a tradition that's practiced a lot. With the seven wives, there are 35 of us in total, all the kids, all dad's kids. So I basically wear 34 to, you know, celebrate my brothers and sisters, but also to represent my family and then my community. So yeah, so that's how I ended up with number 34. And then I found out that Dominique Carboni actually wears number 34 in the VFLW, and I kind of had to bribe her a little bit and explained to her why I really wanted the 34. And yeah, just the beautiful young girl she is, she was like, yeah, you can have it. So yeah, she handed me in at number 34. So I'll be looking forward to running out with 34 this season.
You've got the experience of playing with two other clubs, so starting out with Fremantle and then your time at Richmond. What role do you play in building this new team?
It's always different. I think club by club, it's always different with it being your inaugural season. But I think for me, I think the role I bring in is that experience. It's a pretty new list of people that have not played in the AFLW competition before. So it's just really coming in and really just setting out a whole new culture from the beginning for ourselves and what we want to strive towards in the future. And yeah, there's some exceptional leaders that have also come on board from other clubs who are also helping drive those standards as well. So yeah, it's going to be super amazing. But yeah, I'm just really excited to be a part of it and just really bring myself, my culture, and hopefully I can help inspire the other girls to also go and look into their culture and really see their identity. Because sometimes we think that football is our only identity. You know, there are ancestors and families that have paved the way for us. I always find that helping others discover themselves is really important. So I hope that's what I'm going to be able to bring. And obviously my experience of playing in the AFLW and trying to help the younger girls settle in quick, because it's a competition that you have to settle in real quick because it goes real quick. So I think we're in good hands. It's some really amazing, amazing people. And the male players have just been incredible. The male coaches have been incredible in welcoming us and being a part of the Hawthorn family. So yeah, it's all hands on deck at the Hawthorn Football Club, which is super amazing.
Football has its highs and lows, and you know, on the weekend we saw some real heartbreak for a number of the men's teams. What sustains you when going gets tough?
I think for us is the journey, the generations of young girls that are going to be kind of taking over from us when we do finish and retire in the future. And it's for us, it's about setting the foundation for them, because with anything in life, things are always going to get tough. It's just a matter of, you know, pushing through and using those tough days and tough moments and putting them in your resilient box, because they're the things that, I guess, sustain you when things get tougher. I look at football and yeah, it, you know, there are heartbreaks and there are people losing and people winning, but there are other people in the world that are going through far worse. And I guess that's my perspective and that's how I look at it. It's part of life to kind of be heartbroken. But yeah, for me, I always just look at it, the impact of who we're doing it for. And it's the, you know, the young girls that come with their moms and their dads to our football games this year that are going to be hoping one day to wear the number one or the number 12 or the number 34 or the number 18 jerseys for the Hawthorn Football Club. And they want to be like their idols. So I guess that's what really sustains me, really.
Do you have an idol? Do you have somebody in football that you really look up to or in other sports?
I do. I actually really have a lot of idols. I was very, very lucky to play alongside some amazing individuals when I was down at Swan District and obviously Richmond. And yeah, I've been super blessed with some really amazing role models. One of my big, big role models will have to be Chelsea Randall, Kirby Bentley. And, you know, these women I used to play with, they've just really helped me over the years in really me knowing myself and really me believing in my own abilities. Those, I would have to say, have been my biggest role models in my journey so far. And then in other sports, I was a massive Arsenal fan growing up and still is. One of the people that actually really inspired me to start playing soccer when I was young was a guy by the name of Thierry Henry. And he was just such a professional, and the way he went about his sport was just incredible. So That's my guy. Like, I look forward to meeting him one day. But yeah, I've had some really incredible mentors over the years. And obviously my siblings, they've always been really good at sports growing up. So I've always looked up to them. My sister was a very good cross-country runner. She was also a very good netballer as well. My older brothers were very good soccer players. So I just wanted to kind of be like them growing up. So, yeah.
You mentioned that your family's all in WA and you were able to see them when you went over there for some match sim. I think the Hawks are meant to play in WA in the final round. Is that the first time you'll have family watching you in the brown and gold, or will there be some people who travel over here to support you before then?
I got the luxury this year of going back home twice, which is very rare. I'm super thankful. I'm super grateful. It was amazing to get down there and have the whole family come down. I think there was about 20 plus of them that came down, and everyone was like, whoa, there's so many of them. And I was like, that's like two houses. It wasn't even the whole lot. Everyone was at church that day. So obviously, yeah, they've come and they've come down and supported. Mum normally comes and watches round one or like some significant games, but she's in Africa at the moment. And my older sister is a member of parliament in WA. So she's busy with her career. So it's just going to be my older sister who's here as well, my guardian, who's going to come down with her children and husband. And my best friend and her husband are going to come as well, and some friends. So I'll definitely have a lot of representation from the community this season. They're going to be flirting around. I got one of my really good mates, Kaman Dongren. He's a big Hawks fan. And I remember when I was making the decision to come to the Hawks, he was one of the reasons, actually, for me to decide, because I knew how much this was going to mean to him. And I know him. He's going to definitely travel far and wide to Barrack for the Hawks girls this season. So, definitely going to have a lot of representation, which is fun. Keen to get back to WA in round 10 and play my old side, the Fremantle Dockers, which should be really amazing.
Who should we keep an eye on out of the Hawks? Especially, you know, there's a lot of new faces we'll be getting to watch this season. Who should we keep an eye on?
Oh, there's so many stars. The young kids have just come and just blown, like they've just blown training out of the water. And yeah, obviously Jazz Fleming, she's just such a professional. She just comes with so much professionalism. She's just class. So she's one to watch this season. We call her Big Mac, Kensley Edley. She's our back of the back. She's going to be a star in the making. Charlotte Baskaran is another one. Lucy Wales, our rock, we call her Pendles. The young kids have just taken over training, really, which is amazing. But then you have girls like Tam Luke and Dominique Carboni and Tali Fellows, who are coming from the VFL programs at Hawks, and Casey Demons, who are going to just come and really give us a lot of experience from those competitions, but also very good footballers as well. And then we have obviously our Irish recruits, Anya and Gilly, who are just like, yeah, they've just come and taken the game and just made it their own. There's going to be a lot of girls that are going to really shine this year, which is super amazing. And then we have our captain, who just works hard. Tilly is just a workhorse and professional what she does. So I'm really, really keen to see the girls really just shine this season.
You're such an energetic person, Akech, on field but off field as well. And I know whenever I talk to you, you're always talking about all your side hustles. You're always always busy. What drives you?
I think what drives me is my mum. I think I get it from my mum, honestly. I don't even know half of the time how I manage to do the things that I do. You know, playing football, I work 3 days a week at Jam TV as a production assistant. I run a small business at home called Safari Boutique Australia. I study, I'm doing a Bachelor of Business. I run a public speaking business as well, which a lot of people are like, what? And then I'm an ambassador for Cadbury and Telstra, other things that I do. So I'm just busy. And then on top of that, I got a pretty good social life. I hang out with my friends most of the time. Yeah, I really don't know how I manage it, but I think I get it from mum. Mum's always been a woman of great character. She's always been a woman of strength and vision. And she just went after things. Like there was nothing that my mom was like, nah, I cannot do that. She just was the one that was like, are we climbing the mountain? Perfect. Let's climb the mountain. I mean, this is a woman that walked all the way from South Sudan to Ethiopia and then walked from South Sudan to Uganda, making her way to Kenya for us to essentially end up in Australia. So When I look at her resilience and strength, I said, look, the things that my mom have been able to accomplish and to get us to where we are now, I think are what really drives me. It's not easy. There's always setback in my journey and things go wrong. But I always just remember, what would Helena Yarinog do? And that's my mom. What would she do in these moments? And I think back to your childhood when things were not great. And I think those are the things that really drive me. And knowing that I got 100% support from them, my family has been really just incredible. And especially coming from a community where sports and women didn't really come in the same conversation a lot. But now knowing that the way my family has supported my journey, it's enabling other families as well to get around their kids and enable them to, you know, empower them to go after things. And I think that's what really keeps me going, that I got all this support from my family and my mom, who's like my personal hero. It's pretty cool.
I would actually listen to a podcast series that was just focused on your mum, Akech, because the things I've heard about her, she just sounds absolutely remarkable. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before I let you go, do you have a prediction for the season? Who do you think is going to be the teams to beat?
The prediction for the season, it's going to be a really fiery season. It's going to be a good season. Richmond are going to be very good this season, and I'm very happy for them. Another team that are going to obviously have a lot to prove, Collingwood. Obviously, the new teams, we're coming in to a season that's been established for about 6 seasons. There's going to be a lot of hard days, but I think it's going to eventually end up in good days. And, you know, being a part of a few inaugural teams who are now doing really well, it just gives you kind of a perspective. And I think the message I would give the Hawks fans or any fans there is that patience is key. It's all about the sustainability of the future. Like for us, it'd be great to just, if we had a lot of money, pay the players, you know, get us in full time for us to really practice our craft. But unfortunately, that's not the case. We have to juggle so many things. And, you know, for us, for the club, you know, they've had to work very hard to build a list. And they've done an amazing job, really. And I'm really proud of the way that they built our list, because it's really just rewarding the amazing VFL program that's been so great over the last couple of years. So, and I think that's what, you know, that's what's going to make the competition more sustainable, is having a VFL program that can then feed into your AFLW team. So I'm super, super pumped for us. But I think, Collingwood, Richmond, obviously Adelaide are coming off another grand final win. So they're going to have a point to prove as well. But it's going to be a good season. Really, really good season. So, get excited, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us, Akech.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks, Lucy. Thanks, Akech. I cannot wait to see these games, first round of season 7. There's been some late-breaking changes because Hawthorn and Essendon obviously are playing at Marvel, but, Tess, we just caught up with some other news about other games that are moving that kind of makes sense now that we see how the AFL men's fixture is rolling out.
Yeah, it's actually been a real roller coaster of an hour, by the way, pre-recording, because our DMs are often going off on the Outer Sanctum, and we were messaged by a Melbourne fan called Mel, so shout out to Mel. But Mel let us know about the fact that because the Sydney-Melbourne final had been announced after the AFLW fixture had been announced, there was an issue where they were playing on at the same time at different venues, and for Melbourne fans, they were being asked to split their love. Mel was raising that as an issue, which is fair enough. And before we knew it, the AFL had acted, which, you know, is amazingly swift. They'd moved that Melbourne North Melbourne round 2 clash in the AFLW to the MCG as a doubleheader with the men's Melbourne-Sydney final, which to me, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, that's awesome. Well, that's fantastic. That was dynamic. You know, things happen really swiftly, shows how agile, I think people in the biz would call it. How good's that? But a few people raised the issue of the fact that fans were then going to be put out of pocket because they have to pay a finals fee to go along to that game instead of an AFLW, you know, season, a home and away season price. So, Lucy, is there any price information? Where's that at? What's the issue there?
Yeah, so tickets for round one of the finals are available from $35. So I don't know if you caught up with this, but the AFL announced that they were doing a price freeze at 2019 prices. But that is still more expensive than a $10 ticket to the AFLW or a free ticket if you're an AFLW member. The other thing that's tricky is the logistical overlay of having to log on and get tickets when everybody's getting tickets. So AFLW members have got that early access as well. It's going to be tricky. 5 o'clock on a Friday at the MCG is also a tricky ask, but apart from playing it at a completely different time and making sure that Melbourne women aren't playing on the same day as Melbourne men, I don't know what you do there.
It's an interesting one. There's part of me that likes it, but it's not without its issues, obviously.
I do hate a ticketing drama though.
I know, it makes me feel so I hate ticket anxious. Stress.
I actually
love a bit of ticketing drama. I feel like ticketing drama is in that healthy Venn diagram area where it's not life and death, so I'm happy to feel like it's adrenaline.
Oh, I feel like it is definitely life or death.
I feel like it's death. It's just death.
Lucy and I also went to another. We've really been Selma and Patty all over Melbourne lately, but we went to the launch of a short film that was made by AFL Players for Climate Action, and we were invited by the incredible Isabel Huntington, who was on a panel with Gab Pound, and we saw this amazing short film, Lucy.
It's a short film called Our Local, and it focused on some players returning to their junior clubs to hear how they're transitioning to renewable energy and doing that in terms of trying to help the climate, but also to try and help their clubs and to make sure that their clubs are future-proofed. And it was wonderful. We saw Nell Morris-Dalton and Emma Carney from the AFLW take part in this. And just watch this space. Jump on board. You can follow the AFL Players for Climate Action on social media. And I'm really encouraged by just the energy. There's a, double meaning in that. The clean energy of AFL players trying to do their bit for the climate.
Yeah, it was really impressive to see, actually. Okay, I think it's time that we get out of here. Oh, my goodness, it's upon us. Next time we meet, we'll have some results from the first round. Before we wrap up today, I just want to remind you that we are having a live event at Swinburne and you can get tickets. They are for free, but you just need to register for those tickets. It's called Inside the Group Chat, and we are having so much fun cooking up all of the delights that we're going to be dishing up and serving on that event. It's on the 5th of September at Swinburne in Melbourne. It is going to be live streamed though, so you can log on and watch and play along at home. There's another thing that we need you to do. I'm going to handball this. Lucy, are you the person to explain this?
You may have noticed that we've had a few issues with our feed, with our podcast feed over the last few weeks. And we've been trying to explain it on our social media, and what you will have seen is that there's actually been two versions of the Outer Sanctum in some of your podcast platforms. What we need you to do is to know that we will be podcasting next week and every week through the AFLW season through until the end of that season in December. So when those two feeds combine back into one, it may mean that the one that you're subscribed to drops off. So if it doesn't turn up in your feed next week, just go and have a search and basically unsubscribe from the one that you're in, search for it again, and you'll find the current one. So we're asking you to do a little bit of admin to keep following us, but we love you so much and we really hope that you'll do this for us. And it's been really frustrating.
It has been super frustrating. And the reason why we need you to subscribe is because with our numbers, that's how we actually get some money into the podcast. We really need you to do that. We don't ask you to pay for the pod. So we really need you to do that very technical back end kind of thing to help us out. We will have some clearer messaging once the time has happened that we've been able to merge the feeds, but we're very afraid of losing you because you mean the world to us. There is only one thing left to say, my loves, and that is
go footy!
M&W.